Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and welcome to Katie Piper's Extraordinary People. It is the podcast where I sit down with an extraordinary person and they share their story. They might have overcome some kind of adversity, or they may still be on that journey, but the stories that will make you laugh, cry, and hopefully feel a little bit inspired. With me for this episode is a woman who's turned one of life's most traumatic events into a moment of conversation, support, and shattering stigma. Campaigner and podcast host Lauren Mahon was making huge strides in her digital marketing career when, just at 31 years old, the rug was pulled from underneath her when she was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2016. After the information had sunk in, Lauren knew she wanted to do something powerful with her news. So she created an online community where younger women struggling with cancer could support each other. Lauren wrote about her experiences candidly on her Girl V Cancer blog, and thousands of followers later began co-hosting her very own award-winning BBC podcast, You, Me and the Big C. After raising over £60,000 for charity with a range of slogan t-shirts, aka tit tees, Lauren is keeping it real and approachable whilst continuing to change the conversation for women. And today marks the first day of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. I'm thrilled and honoured to have Lauren join me on the podcast today. Welcome, Lauren.
Thanks, my darling.
I've been wanting to get you on here for a while. You're someone that lots of people know of. We've seen you on TV shows. We've heard your podcast. Lots of us follow you on IG. But I wanted to start at the beginning because I feel like what I know of you is sort of present tense and what you've been through. But I feel like I don't actually know much about your original background. And who was Lauren before everyone knew you? What were you like growing up?
Do you know what? I've always been gobby. I've never been shy, Katie, to be honest. Lauren's always been quite a friendly, outgoing, warm person, but probably not the biggest fan of herself. Highly insecure. Always worried people didn't like her. Probably a bit of a, actually quite a lot of a people pleaser. But I had this confidence. I've always had this confidence where I it's that fight or flight moment where, you know, people will shy away from situations in case it makes them look silly, but I seem to just put a clown hat on and go, I'm just going to go for it. But loved life, loved doing bits, loved being social. Funnily enough, my job pre-who I am now was social media. And
Makes sense why your page is so slick then. Okay.
Thanks, honey. like pre-port being poorly, because I was 31 when I got ill. So pre then, I was living with friends in East London, always at a festival, always on holiday, which isn't too distant from pre-pandemic Lauren, to be honest. My career was that I worked in, I'm going to shut my window, by the way, because I live in Hackney and we're going to get a lot of sirens. I feel like less like I'm on line of duty now. my job, I love communication. Like, I just love people and I love communicating with people. I'm fascinated by like branding and how we translate a feeling or a moment or, you know, an emotion and what we want to portray. And so it just became very apparent very quickly that my niche was like the more creative side of marketing, and then kind of went into social media. So I really have always loved what I've done. like influence marketing. Ambitious, is a joy. So. Yeah, oh, do you know what though? Ambitious, but I don't think I fit the neurotypical version of how the world works in terms of our working structures. I love what I do, but I literally 6 months in and I'm like, I need a new challenge. Working within these confines of what we see now. I know things have changed so much over the last few years, but I always really struggled to conform. And then I'd get to a certain point in my job where I'd really struggle.
I'm exactly like this. So yeah, I totally get this. So this is why it's so stark for me that here you are, you've been to uni, you're successful, you're in a managerial role, you're young, you're 31. And then along comes a diagnosis in 2016 that, you know, the woman you're describing doesn't like being controlled, doesn't like being confined, doesn't like having to be sort of dictated to in that way. You're ambitious, you're a go-getter. Tell me about getting that diagnosis at that age. Can you describe the experience?
I always describe it, people always laugh, but you know when Madonna was at the Brits and the cape got stuck and she got ripped from the stage? Backwards, yeah. Bit like that. That's mm-hmm. what it feels like, a bit like that. Like, you know, the thing as well with pre-cancer Lauren is I had mad health anxiety. I have struggled with severe anxiety, depression as a result of the anxiety that went unmanaged for years, because we're in a very different space now with mental health than we ever were when I was 24. Mm-hmm. And I've always been very, very aware of my mortality. Had a couple of really traumatic losses when I was 16 that just kind of set the scene for what I thought death was and looked like. And they were both premature and both very tragic. So in my mind, I was hyper aware of my own mortality. So to get a diagnosis at 31 was also this, like, felt like a self-fulfilling prophecy almost, like mm-hmm. knew it, told you yeah. so. And it kind of was a massive process for me to understand and learn that you can be sick and you can knock on death's door, but you can also come back from that place. So like at 31, to think that was it, was horrific. Like, I also genuinely feel like, and I think we're all guilty of it, and you could probably hard relate, very much comfortably numb in my existence on this planet, going with the flow, just not really feeling the everyday. Yeah, I was just comfortably numb before I got sick. And then all of a sudden, it was like, oh, so this counts, every second counts, every day counts. I am grateful that I am here. Okay, we're not mucking about here. Like, life is not promised, tomorrow is not promised, and it does change your mindset in ways that you wish that it didn't take a trauma to, but it does often.
Is it right that you were given confusing terminology at the very beginning that where you didn't know where you were at and how far yeah. along you were?
So when I was in the room and she said, I'm really sorry, it's cancer, obviously, first of all, my world fell out of my bum and then I started panicking and I just said, I don't want to die. And she said, well, don't think that's going to happen. And what she said was, you've got a grade 3 tumour, but I heard stage 3, and I knew that stage 3 in terms of cancer was the later stages. So there's 1 to 4. 4 is incurable, but you can live with it long term. I don't like the word terminal, really don't. Stage 3 obviously is that little bit more advanced. It does mean that the cancer spread quite aggressively, or it might have hit 1 or 2 lymph nodes or whatever. And stage 2 is, it's a bit more contained. So stage 1 is like you've literally caught it at the point, which yeah. is where we want to be.
Yeah.
So I heard grade 3 and I thought I was stage 3. And I only kind of knew these terminologies because I've been around cancer with my grandparents. Like, we were very mm-hmm. much, very much part of their care with my mom and the family when we were teenagers. So I knew bits and bobs, but I think my mind had warped what it meant. I'm going to say it, like, I don't want anyone to know what that means unless you have to. Yeah, it was very confusing. I mean,
it's talking in that medical speak around you when your whole world yeah. is like crumbling around you.
You become in that moment, you become a conveyor belt. You're mm-hmm. mechanical, then your body becomes mechanical. You are parts to be fixed. You're not Lauren, you're a hospital number. It's like a production line.
You started riding that line, you know, complying, having your treatment. You didn't have a mastectomy. Tell me what
I had a lumpectomy.
Okay, I've never heard of that. What's that?
So a lumpectomy is where, for me, because I have such small bosoms, which is the irony of me getting breast cancer, by the way, I always say mm-hmm. it, I'm like, mine are a goodwill gesture, so I never really understood why it's happened to me. But a lumpectomy basically is where they remove the area and margins around the tumour itself. So right. where I had a small breast and I was very slight, they said, if we do a mastectomy and we have to rebuild this breast, you're going to have like quite severe scarring. Mm-hmm. We know that, you know, that can cause problems in terms of mobility, also body image. The surgery is a big one. So if we can try and save the breast for you at 31, we want to try. So they threw everything at me, and we did. We saved the breast.
This might sound ungrateful and general, and I don't mean it about everyone that expresses it, but I do think when some people say to people, "You're so inspiring," or "I admire you," it comes from a good place and it's authentic and it's genuine. But there's sometimes a strand of that that means, oh, thank God it's not me.
Oh, 100%.
And it's like repelling you in a way of like, that's your lived experience over there. I don't want that. I just couldn't and wouldn't, but you can. Mm. So, you know, that is great. And it's not, I don't mean, it's not a nasty thing. It's not an insult, but it's sometimes people's admiration is a repellent as well.
Like, if people say to me now, "Oh, you're an inspiration," whatever, I can take that because of the work I've done. And I'm like, yes, the work I've done since that.
Yeah, they mean the way you conducted yourself in your movements following that. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'll take that compliment. But when I was in, because I can appreciate where that comes from, when I was in the depths of it, and even before I started doing anything with my diagnosis, Katie, like, people are like, "You're so brave." And I'm like, I'm not though.
No.
I'm not brave. I'm just having to deal with what I've been dealt. And there's a lot of the cancer community that, you know, rebels against this idea of, because what it does is it others us. So we will be standing there and they'll put us all in a row in a really pink fluffy campaign and they'll go, "Look at them. Aren't they so brave?" It's like, you may as well line up everyone who's just gone and done a Tesco shop and gone, "Aren't they so brave for braving that queue?" It's the same difference. Like, you have to get on and you have to try and survive. So it's not like you're brave. You are just building a resilience that everyone has to build in life. And I think it is hard because I just feel like what I'd rather someone go is, "Do you know what, mate? You're doing really well handling this. Well done."
Mm.
Not "You're brave." Not "You're inspirational." I just want someone to be like, "Do you know what, love? Like, credit to you. Like, I feel like you're handling this really well." And it just feels more
real.
I don't know, on a level.
So did you feel then that you had to really fight to keep other people from feeling sorry for you and almost telling you how you should feel?
Babe, that's what Girl Vs Cancer is all about. I literally got so fed up of it. I got so fed up of telling people I was ill and them looking at me like I was about to drop dead in front of them, or like telling me what's what when they've never had a cancer patient. "Oh, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that?" And their perception of what a cancer patient looked like. There was so much I was learning every day that I had no idea about. And all that kept coming into my mind was, I don't want a future Lauren to feel like this. I just want her to be able to find a couple of people that they can go, "Okay, she's a bit of me. I get where she's coming from and I'm going to be like her. I'm going to be able to handle it like her and I can still be me whilst doing it." So that's why Girl Vs Cancer started. It started, it's almost 5 years, you know, October 21st.
Yeah. We should talk in detail about what you've done, because actually, I mean, that's the kind of sort of energy you have. Like, you're quite a doer, you know, and I feel like that was, from what you're saying about your past, it feels like you were always a doer, as yeah, being defined by having an illness. And you did do something positive, you know, you did turn, whether it was physical or mental pain, into purpose, which I suppose is what attracts other people who feel that they couldn't do that. They don't know they couldn't do that because they haven't been in that position. But how long after the diagnosis did you start on that quest to do something positive with your new life, I guess?
Mate, honestly, this is like, no one will be surprised who knows me. Literally, I went to the pub after I got diagnosed, obviously, because I'm Lauren Mann. And then the next day...
What did you have to drink? What did you have?
Oh, just bottles of Prosecco, mate. Just bottles and bottles of Prosecco. All my mates came and met me there, and it just made it easier because it meant they all got to see me at once, and it meant that I could kind of manage them, but also like feel safe, because I didn't want, it made me still feel like me, because your whole world has changed in that moment, but everything's the same apart from you. It's weird. Mm-hmm. It's like a bereavement. Mm. And yeah, so the next day I woke up my mum and I went, "I wasn't checking my boobs. None of my friends are checking their boobs. I need to do something with this. I'm going to make t-shirts and sell them for charity. I want young people checking their breasts." Yeah. And it was a panic move, because I am the queen of distraction techniques. When I'm going through any kind of stress, anxiety, fear, worry, I will throw myself into something. It's what I've always done. It used to be drugs and drink and partying, or like horrible relationships, or, you know, creating a blog. I had like 7 blogs, I swear, at one point. So it's no surprise
so
90s. What I did. So 90s, such a 90s kid. How many MySpaces can you make? And but I just knew that I was angry and I felt really robbed and I just didn't understand how it could happen to women like me. But then also I was like, well, if it's happening to women like me, it's happening to a lot of women like me. And why is no one talking about why young women aren't checking their breasts? So I'd already knew about Copperfield. So obviously I wanted straight away to work with them and raise money for them. But I also wanted to share my experience through an Instagram lens. Like, I didn't want it to just be here's me in a hospital chair. I'm quite creative. I love photography. I love that, like, that influencer aesthetic. Like, that's my jam. Mm. It's what I've worked in social media for years and stuff. So it was like showing cancer, but through the lens of what I would always create. And it really, people really caught on and people found me as a result. In the community, I started to build my own community out of it, like of support. And then as I got to the other side of treatment, I realized there was something in this. The t-shirts were flying out.
When did the t-shirts start?
They start, I think I launched them in February of 2017. They were meant to launch in December, but I was really quite poorly. And I had £500 saved. I was meant to go on holiday with before I got sick and just didn't happen. So I took that £500 and I found a supplier that did me 500 t-shirts at £1 each and they sold out in 2 weeks.
They're really iconic. I mean, anyone who's listening, they're the tip tees.
They're the tip tees.
And they're really iconic now, aren't they? Like, you just see them, you know them. Yeah, it's a really recognisable brand.
Yeah, the original slogan tee. So me being like a little Cockney gobby cow was like, right, I'm going to put knockers and jubblies and fun bags on t-shirts. And just, it was a way of talking about breasts without it being aggressive or without it being twee and pink and fluffy. Like me, it felt like me.
Yeah, humanising it. Yeah,
humanising it and having a laugh and just getting people having the conversation. And it's done really well and it's still doing great things.
It's quite big. Do you know what I was thinking about, right? Instagram started out for just good-looking people and glossy, glamorous people. And it was just a place of, like, nice pics, right? So it wasn't a place for illness and treatment and disease or disability. It is now. It's a varied, like, diverse place. But it's quite brave to put something unsexy on there back then, right? Yeah. So how did your followers react? Because I think it was quite like new. And how quickly did the following grow? Because people are interested in what you've got to say, but you didn't know that. It wasn't like you weren't jumping on a trend or anything, you know?
No, there was no, it just felt very organic for me to do it there because it's a place that I use and I work in. It also felt different. And I knew that's where my peer group were. So I wanted to speak to them because I wanted to show them this is what a diagnosis is. It also is a way of me communicating what I was going through without having to answer 1,000 questions, 1,000 WhatsApps and controlling my narrative rather than having people try and tell me what my narrative was. But it was scary because once it was out there, I couldn't then take it back. So it meant it was very exposing and let's make it right. We didn't know what was going to happen. But all I knew was it felt like the right thing to do and it felt like what I needed to do because I've always been a sharer. I've always had blogs and it just felt like this is a way for me to document my journey and my process, almost like a Dear Diary moment.
Do you ever regret it?
No, I don't. I wouldn't be where I am now. And I know even last night I was laying in bed, what a girl in the community who I'm really close to, she's got a really big following and she's going through a lot behind closed doors and people just don't know. I didn't know until she voice noted me. Her mum's really been through a lot with breast cancer lately. I had no idea. And I had a voice note from her telling me such and she went, mum found Girl vs Cancer and she's feeling really empowered by it and she just felt like, okay, like here's where I can talk to people like me. Oh, look at all these women with cancer living their normal lives, being normal, being who they are, and not the cancer, not being cancer patients, but being themselves. And that's what it's all about. Because, you know, when you see cancer, whether it be for a big charity campaign or whether it be for a brand doing some charity work, you're put on that stage and that platform as a cancer patient. So you're portrayed in a certain way. Whereas Girl vs Cancer is by the community for the community. So I'm all about the humor behind a hospital number, man. I'm like, yes, there is cancer involved here, whether it's past, present, going to be in your future, but you're still who you are. So I'm always about using the community and the campaigns that I do, but showing them for them, not as their diagnosis.
There's a really good quote, you know, from the podcast. It says, cancer takes enough from those it affects about allowing it to strip out our personalities. Mm-hmm. And I love that. Like, it's so what you're about, isn't it?
Well, it does, because you, for ages, that is your full-time job. You are a cancer patient. You have to survive. You have to get through each treatment, each grueling thing that brings you to the edge. You have to come back from. It becomes all-consuming, and it take you forget who you are. So it's important to have people around you who treat you like you are. And if that ain't going to be your friends and family, then come to us, because we see you, babe. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? I'm all about getting back to the person as quickly as possible.
Do you think it did strip a part of you temporarily or permanently?
I can never unknow what I know. I can never unexperience the moment of thinking I may not survive something. I can never unexperience my hair falling out in the bath, my mum hiding it from me in her pockets. I can never unexperience my little brother walking into the room, like after they told me, in his face, like looking at me with this smile, like it's going to be okay. But I could see in his eyes, he didn't think it was. Like, there's things that I can never take away. Mm. But also what it has done is it's given me this fearlessness, because I'm so scared that it's going to come back and kill me, that I live in a way that nothing is guaranteed. So I just do and go. And I was already a doer, but I live with this real need to do what I need to do now, because we don't know what tomorrow holds. And that is sad in a lot of ways, but also I think it makes me do more. And it makes me live fuller and love bigger and have bigger gratitudes, because I am very, very aware of my mortality.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You may have heard of the podcast Juicy Scoop. Wondered what it is? Why aren't you listening? Well, I'm its host, created it, been doing it for 7 years. I'm Heather McDonald of Juicy Scoop with Heather McDonald. Now, I could tell you why you should be listening to my show, but my listeners wanted to write the ad for me, and here are some of the things they said. Not your regular Juicy podcast. Catch up on all the juicy topics from Hollywood and pop culture to true crime and beyond. Heather McDonald's Juicy Scoop always has great guests, great laughs, and great gossip. It's a comedian's take on the hottest headlines. Juicy Scoop is the pop culture news you want to hear. No BS, no filter, no filler. Raw, real, and in the moment. Throw in the hilarity of amazing comedians that you will instantly be obsessed with, a juicy crime story, and a dash of normal life in LA moments, and you've got yourself an amazing week of Juicy Scoop. 2 episodes every week, every Tuesday and Thursday. It will never let you down.
So I was laying awake last night thinking about you. Creepy.
Didn't have that kind of podcast, Katie.
And like, knowing I'm going to record with you, and I was thinking, and I was watching videos of you, probably quite old videos of you actually on YouTube and stuff like that. And I was thinking, there's something different about Lauren. She's got something that other people don't have, because even though we were talking about that concept of being inspiring, there was another road you could have gone down. You know, we did talk about anxiety and depression at the start. So you could have switched off. You could have not engaged. There's other approaches to this that you didn't choose. And you did make other people your priority, even if it was distraction technique. If it was just distraction technique, you wouldn't have gone as far as you've gone and carried on today. So there is something in you, and it's quite special. And
oh,
I don't
Thank
know if,
you.
Yeah, it is, because there's a whole thing that you've done here. Like, you have redefined the stereotype of cancer. You've provided this invaluable resource that is going to be there forever. You know, like, it's quite phenomenal. So why didn't you take the other path? What is in you that's different? Has it always been there? Do you recognize it?
It's a kind of rebellion. I just, there's something in me that, you know, fight or flight, I tend to run into things. Like, when I was growing up, if the boys were having like a scrap at college, I'd run towards it and people would hold me back, because my instant reaction is to, no, get them off of him. If someone says something, I've been told off by my friends and family in the street all the time. If I'm somewhere and someone shouts some abuse at somebody, or, you know, is rude or this, I'm the one who, with strangers, be like, don't talk to them like that. Did it? And part of it is probably because I was carrying a lot of aggression because of the hurt I've been through. But I think part of it is just because that's who I am. Mm-hmm. And I think with the cancer stuff, it's no different. I think, you know, it broke me in ways that I can't explain. It isolated me in ways that I don't want anyone to experience, but they're going to. This is a life-changing thing. Like, whether I do this work or not, it's going to live with me every single day. I'm going to think about that diagnosis, not all day, every day. I remember 2 years after my diagnosis, I realised it had been a week since I'd woken up and I thought about cancer first thing, which was a big change. So, you know, it's not there all day, every day. If I'm not working in cancer world, my brain is always ticking with ideas for it, but I can kind of almost make it like businessy. But there's other things going on, but it's still a part of who I am. There, every time I have an ache, a pain, a cough, a lump, a bump, anything, I'm always like, oh my God, what is that? Like, that's not going to go away just because I don't work in cancer. Every time I see an advert for a charity, every time I hear of a diagnosis, every time I see someone walking down the street, you can tell they've had chemotherapy, I'm never not going to feel a way about it. And it's just going to sit in my brain. And I'd rather do something with this fucking... Sorry, I can't double spell on it, but I said it.
It's fine, don't worry.
With this kind of anxiety, and I need to put that energy somewhere. I have got a lump, right? I recently had jaw surgery, so I've got plates in my face. And just up from the plate, there's a lump that's formed, right? Quite a hard lump, feels like it's on the bone. So, guaranteed that's going to be something to do with my surgery, right?
When I tell you, or something.
I laid in bed 2 nights ago, sobbing, because I Googled, and I'm like, it's a tumour, because that's all it is now. Nothing can ever just be my body going, whoops, every now and then. Mm-hmm. It has to be something that's going to kill me. And, you know, that's an anxiety I'm always going to live with all my life. And it's really hard to explain, do you know what? I can explain it. My mate Bradley, Brad Goodger, he founded a charity called Alike, which is phenomenal. It's an app that is there to connect the cancer community, the first one of its kind. So if anyone's listening and you're trying to connect with the cancer community, like in a conversational basis and just have chats, go and download Alike. But he said to me once that cancer is like the Hotel California, because you can check out, but you can never leave. And it's the truest word that's ever been spoken to me.
Mm. My mum got diagnosed 8 years ago, and it started with bowel. It went to liver, and then separately she had skin cancer, and then now it's gone to lung. And it's been like 8 years.
She's amazing.
And she's had surgery, chemo, radiotherapy, immunotherapy. She's at a stage now, there's no treatment. And she's 70. So, and we, every Christmas we've been like, all right, we better do something, because we don't know what's happening. And there has been times where she's been really, really ill. At the moment, she's just doing her thing. Like, she's as healthy as past, like carrying on. But that's the thing, like you've touched on, it's always there and it's always unknown, and there's good times and there's bad times, but there's a lot of uncertainty. And it's very different, that living with that uncertainty at 70 versus in your 30s. And, you know, one thing I wanted to talk to you about is love. And I watched you on First Dates. And I love watching First Dates anyway. And then you were on and I was like, oh my God, it's Laura. And I thought, this is interesting, because wrongly, there's this whole thing that comes of, you know, society saying when women should have children, when they should get married, when they shouldn't, and what disease or disability means for a woman when it comes to love, sex, having a family. And I wondered, I mean, you talked at the start of this chat about urgency and how it created urgency. Society creates urgency for women anyway, like, you know, regardless. So yours is heightened. Where are you at with all of that and all those labels?
Do you know what? I just have the faith that things work out as they should. I am not somebody who believes in forcing yourself down a path because you should. And I think, like, you know, I always make a joke, I say, dust settles, not me. And it's true. Like, I'm not going to settle for lesser than, because I know that this life is so precious and we all deserve the very best happiness we can possibly have. And I think a lot of us do, you know, we feel like we have to have certain things by a certain point. I do want love. I do want a relationship. I love being in love and I love being in a relationship, but not if it takes from me. And so, you know, I have been dating and doing bits the last couple of years, met people, you know, probably stayed in things that I shouldn't have because of the pandemic, and because they weren't serving me, but because I just felt like I needed that intimacy and that connection.
We all do that though. We all do that, don't you think?
Yeah. And I, like, you know, I think cancer made me realise that, and everyone's life has different paths and they meander. And I think if you try and force yourself through a door that's not opening, that's where problems arise and that's where you go off the path that you're meant to be on. So I'm very much a surrender to the process. I try not to have too much attachment to outcomes, which is very hard at times because when you want something, you want something. But also, like, I think before I got poorly, I wanted someone because I wanted to feel wanted and I wanted to feel loved and I wanted to feel worthy. And now that I feel all those things in myself because of the work that I've done on myself over the last 5 years and because of, you know, I think it's very hard to get close to your own death without having to reevaluate how you treat yourself and, you know, that you are loved and you are valued and you are worthy. We're so lucky to even be born onto this planet in the beginning.
Yeah, it's a luxury, not a necessity.
Yes.
To who you are, you know. And like, you know, we're talking about you, that something happened to you when you're 31. Like, that's a good few years ago and you've changed now. You're a different person. I feel like, you know, obviously we don't have the same past, but what I relate to you and what I really like and admire about you is because I follow you on Instagram, you don't fit the label. You're not a victim. You don't feel sorry for yourself. Just because we know you for your diagnosis, you don't actually talk about it all the time. And like your sort of aesthetics on Instagram for me are like aspirational. I like the way you dress.
Oh, thanks,
like,
baby girl.
Yeah, I just, you know, I'm attracted to you because I think you're cool. I think you're fun. I think you've got high morals. I think you're, you know, there's all these reasons. Like, you're one of those girls, if I saw you in a shop, I'd look at your outfit, you know, that kind of thing. And it's like, it sounds a bit weird again.
No, I'm that person. But if I see someone in a dress, I'm like, excuse me, where's that from? I'm that person as well, mate, don't worry.
So this is what I feel that you've done that's so big. And this is what I just think so cool about your long list of achievements is when anyone that's been told you've got a disability now, you've got a disease now, you think like, oh my God, that's it now. I'll just be wearing a stained cardigan and no one will talk to me. And it's horrible when you feel like you're just written off and lose an identity. So for me, you're part of that massive movement that you changed that. Like, you are desirable. You are aspirational. Like, you are doing all your things. And it is changing that whole label. And maybe like you'll be one of those people that are contributing to eradicate that perception, that stigma, and completely just removing it. And maybe like when my children's children are adults, it won't be there.
I hope so. And it's so kind of you to say, like, genuinely, like, all I ever wanted to do was just make sure that other girls like me, or people that identify as female, non-binary, is the space I'm moving into now as well. But I just don't want anyone to feel that they are not, that they're completely stripped of who they are, that they don't can't be related to, that they can't find people that get them. I think the time of, you know, this one size fits all version of cancer and treatment and how we communicate stuff to people has changed. And like, I'm really proud that Girl vs. Cancer and like the podcast that I do is been instrumental in that. And I'm actually really excited and proud of the things that it can achieve. Like, we talked at length when I recently saw you about, you know, how hard it is to run something on your own and how it can break you. And actually, I think I want to give you some news because I've not been able to tell you yet. But since our conversation, I've decided to make Girl vs. Cancer a registered charity now.
Oh, yeah. I'm so happy for you. That's just a really, really good next step.
I'm just a bit like, I never wanted to do it because I think there's so many amazing charities out there doing amazing things. And I didn't want to take from them, which is mad because there is no lack. There is no lack. There is enough for everybody.
Yeah.
But I just didn't want to replicate what they were doing. And I think 5 years down the line, I know what Girl vs. Cancer is and what it's going to become and what value it adds to the community is different to anything else that's out there. So now feels like 5 years to anniversary it, to make it a charity, to get that access to funding, to get the support network in terms of a team, which means that I'll be a better leader and I'll be able to do better things, bigger things for the community because I'm supported, is the really important next step. And we did have a really good chat and it really did sit with me. And
good natural progression. I think it's an obvious next step.
Yeah, it's
You've
just
done
mad.
All that legwork.
Yeah, I've done 5 years, bloody hell.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm just...
You get less for murder, as they say.
What's different about it is we're by the community. We're by people like me for people like me. So it's the whole community. It's not just me, this is the community owns this space and we want to better the experience of others from what our experiences are. And I think that's got real power.
That's amazing. I mean, this is a whole new chapter. You touched there on another chapter just a few minutes ago. You talked about your pronouns. I didn't know anything about this. Tell me about this.
Oh no. I'm a she, and I'm straight and I'm cis. But I feel like in the world that I'm in, I've done a lot of learnings in the last 5 years. And like when I first got diagnosed, cancer was white, elderly, cis, and you didn't really see any other representation. I have worked really closely with my friend Saima, with Leanne from Black Women Rising over the last 5 years, because I was doing casting calls on Girl vs Cancer for people to feature in campaigns, and everyone would come back to me was white and blonde, and I was like, what is going on? Like, where are the other stories that need hearing? So Girl vs Cancer is a space, I think, really to hero those stories that are seldom heard and give them a platform, because all the other big charities are doing everything else. And also, like, it's looking at like non-binary space. So like I've got loads of friends in the LGBTQ community I'm really close to, and having an understanding what it's like as a homosexual man or woman to go into a medical setting, there is a lot of bias. It like then elevate that again by being trans or non-binary, where the lack of understanding is, and it's all about language. Like, you know, breast cancer is touted as a woman's illness because it's breast, but everybody has breast tissue. So if the language is all feminine and boobs and pink and fluffy, we're alienating a whole bunch of people. I mean, I'm a girl, but I don't do pink and fluffy, so I switch off when I see that kind of stuff. So it's, again, it's the new, so Girl vs Cancer's rebranded. It launches in October.
It's exciting.
Very exciting. It's the new chapter and the new logo and everything. It represents that. It's a space for whatever woman and feminine means to you. So we're a space for women, femme, and non-binary folk. Yeah.
You've got so much to be proud of.
Thank you, pal.
And we haven't even covered everything. What is your biggest achievement, personal and career to date?
I think the thing that I'm proudest of is I have managed to find a way to love myself. I didn't before I had cancer. I'm really proud of that. And I'm proud that in doing that, I've been able to support other people, just knowing that everything I put out and everything I'm trying, the love and the care and the empathy I put out is helping people. To me, that will always be a pride. Like, I'm really proud that my vulnerability is given other strength. That's something I'm just proud of. I'm proud.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And people are checking their breasts more. Mm-hmm. That has changed, hasn't it? We are discussing it. We are talking about it. We're physically doing it. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about your future, and I was thinking, oh, I hope she writes a book. And I thought, probably knowing you, you're probably already writing a book.
Not yet. I will. So basically, I just want to get Girl vs Cancer in a really solid place in terms of a team. Because the thing is, if I step back from it, then nothing happens. So I'm like, do you know what? Just this year, let me get it sorted. And then the future is, you know, I do want to explore me since cancer and the doors that have opened for me. Like, Katie, like, I never would have been sat here chatting to you. I could never say that I'd be sat in a, you know, in a social setting, me and you having a chat together. And, you know, it's opened up such a phenomenal world of broadcasts and things like that that I owe to myself to explore. But I'm not going to feel comfortable doing that until I know Girl vs Cancer has been looked after. So,
totally get it. Yeah, you need to do everything in the right order for you so that you can actually give it your best shot and enjoy it. And this is your world that you always belonged in, because you studied for this, you have the experience in it, you know, that you should have always been here. But, you know, sometimes I think there's some really shit saying about, like, you know, it takes a crisis to take two leaps forward or something like that. And I think I can relate to that. Maybe you can relate to it too. And maybe the world gets it now, because you hear everyone now like, oh, since the pandemic, it made me realize I need to get divorced or change my job or move or whatever it was. And people are starting to realize that sometimes this unwelcome change, we don't want it, we're not glad it happened, but it can be the catalyst for other positive things. It wasn't a positive thing to happen to us, but the things afterwards, what it kind of influenced us to do. Mm-hmm. I just think you're such a great influence for all different types of people. And if you write a book, we all want to buy it.
Oh,
and
thanks, mate.
Yeah, you are amazing. You are phenomenal. And I'm really excited for this new chapter and your next steps. And I will continue to stalk you online.
Thank you, darling. Please do slide into my DMs anytime, Katie Piper.
Thanks for listening to Katie Piper's Extraordinary People. If you haven't already, please follow where you get your podcasts. Also, if you enjoyed this, please help us spread the word. Rate and review the show or share on your socials.